Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Great to have you in on Tuesday. It's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, 80s action star Colton Stone, and you. Hope you had a wonderful holiday weekend. Family and friends and remembering loved ones and those who served. We are loaded up today. Plenty to get into. Mitch Sherman going to stop by. ESPN.com. Usually it's a Big Ten buffet time. Tuesday at 5, Rick Pizzo is on his way to Spain. Let us just pause for a moment and be jealous. We do have Charlie McBride for you. A Mondays with Charlie has been shifted to Tuesday, so Blackshirt Charlie coming up in an hour. Jacob Padilla will be with us to talk some Husker hoops. Jacob knows his NBA. We'll get his take on Tim Miles' big weekend when it comes to getting that second big-time player, Copeland, to come back. And we'll have some fun. Nick Saban lost his mind because he was agitated. It was okay. He was at a SEC summer, whatever they call it, pre-media days. Some thoughts on NBA's Game 7 last night with Golden State and Houston. Can tap the line, Chilling Bridge Court, can tap house. Let's do that. 466-3776. 466-3776. 1-800-825-5865. Find us on Twitter at Schmidt underscore radio at Two Birds, One Stone. Both on Twitter at Hail Varsity. You can email Chris at HailVarsity.com. Okay, I put a picture out of our brisket on Sunday. I had ribs and chicken at my father's yesterday. And the ribs and chicken at my father's, incredible. The ribs at my house Sunday, fantastic, with my brother-in-law, Uncle Andy. The brisket, let's get to the meat here. It was so, so good. It was so well done. It was so tasty. Was it a bit dry? Maybe. There's my update. Long live having a smoker in your backyard. It was lovely. Colton, I didn't invite you. It was an oversight on my part.
It's all right.
But it was good, and I wanted to taunt you with a picture.
Well, if it's a little dry, it's, you know, they make barbecue sauce, so.
I know, man, but this thing.
Or the, you know, the juice from the brisket, but I guess it's a little harder to,
We kept it on a little bit long, so.
That's the, you know, it's a risky run, but yeah.
It's the dangers. Good stuff from Hail Varsity's Brandon Vogel. No shock right there. And he gets into Nebraska's offense. And let's start off with a little football. And let's take a trip down memory lane. And I think about this team a lot. I think about the 2010 Nebraska football team. I know that that's freaking 8 years ago. But just walk with me for a second. Okay, you're leaving the Big Ten for the Big Ten, and it's your farewell, sayonara, your number one twice, Big 12. And you have that team defensively and offensively, and I mean, and you have Will Compton, you have Lavonte David, you still have Jared Crick, you have Fonzie. I mean, you had one to two NFL dudes at each level, guys that are still in the league or got time in the league or won a Super Bowl like Fonzie. Okay, on field. And then you had Roy, you had Rex, you had Brandon Kenny, you had Searles and Qualley, and man, you had an offensive line. You had Long, and then you had Taylor. You had a Taylor Martinez that could run and throw, and they were incredible. They were great. And then they ended up kind of going out with a whimper. It's not what they deserved, but it's what they got because they just didn't handle their business. They got hosed against A&M. They rematched with Washington and didn't care, and they blew a 17-point lead to Oklahoma. But, man, they were fun. They were good. They lost to Texas. It made me cry. Didn't, but could have. So when you look at the offense, and that was an insanely good offense. Roy went for 308 against Missouri, okay? And Brandon puts a pretty good little nugget out here about what Nebraska's offense can be in the Big Ten. And an offense that I would watch or see, or I'd see final scores, it would be Indiana when Kevin Wilson was there. Mm-hmm. And man, they didn't win, but they were right there a lot. They were right there a lot against Michigan. They were right there a lot against Ohio State, where it turned into they could keep up, and the only difference is Ohio State or Michigan's defense got one more stop. There was no answer for a Tevin Coleman or a Jordan Howard run game. And then they'd mix in with some explosive passing and some quick space stuff. Mm-hmm. And Indiana was... They were the 5-7, 6-6 football team that couldn't play defense, but they bludgeoned every high-powered, big dog blue blood. And I think that's what Nebraska's offense can become on a regular basis. They can be that threatening, that devastating, that good on offense. How soon? Don't know. But it kind of gets me back, and we'll talk with Coach McBride about this. It is going to be about the defense. And when Nebraska moved, and what Nebraska's problem has been, aside from Banker's second year, if we want to be honest, mm-hmm. has been Nebraska's defense. It has been Nebraska's defense since the moment they moved. Okay, it was geared to stop, shut down passing, and in the Big 12, that's what you need to do to win. And you move to the Big Ten, you line up, you get in a three-point stance, and have you been able to stop the run worth a damn? No, you haven't been. You haven't been able to do it on a consistent basis. You were good. You're pretty good in that second year you were in the Big Ten when you went to the Big Ten championship game. Getting my numbers confused here. But aside from that team defensively, mm-hmm. they just haven't had it. Haven't had it. And I'm wondering... defensively, how they can live. Is it going to be a shootout all the time, every time? And is that going to be okay? Or are you going to be able to hunker down, stop the run, and just out-tough somebody in that phone booth that's the line of scrimmage? Think your offense will be fine. You'll have faith in the offense. It will be able to do a lot for you and win you a lot of games. But there is going to be a game or two. You need the defense to be really good. We say this every year, and it's no different despite coaching staff or scheme. They've just got to be able to function and be really good. And then can you get to that level where you're great? We talk about the 2010 Nebraska offense. We talk about the 2009 Nebraska defense, mm-hmm. or the 2008 offense with the 2009 defense, right? It'd be really cool to get married, where your offense is smoking, your defense is really good, and they can stop the run, and they can get turnovers. They're aggressive. They can blitz. And listen, man. The blueprint defensively that I see from Chenander and what they want to be, there'd be some times early where, and this is last year's Central Florida team, mm-hmm. where they're playing SMU or they've got somebody that, I mean, in the AAC was a pretty good league, Temple, let's say. And it's a two-year removed Temple team that was really good. AAC's had a team that's been top 10 good. They've just kind of rotated around, be it South Florida, be it Temple, or Central Florida, right? Mm-hmm. So you look at these options in the AAC, and you have some of these road games where, okay, as the season's deteriorating in Lincoln, you're flipping more and more over to Central Florida games. And watching their defense, you saw, okay, they're getting gashed in the run game. Are they stopping the triple option against Navy or Army or whoever? Listen, they would get shook or they would get hit early but then the defense would stabilize, and boom, maybe 10 to 17 points would be allowed. They always figured it out. And then they force a turnover, or they get a big sack. They get after the quarterback. They get the ball back for the offense. I think the defense can do that. I just don't know what's going to peak and carry first. Is it going to be the offense? Is it going to be the defense? And somebody needs to step forward with this schedule. Not that they have to go 7-5 or 6-6, but just one of the sides of the ball is going to have to be the front runner to let the other side catch up and then get better as the season goes along for Nebraska football in a very, very tough schedule. If you were to pick one side of the ball that you think can have kind of a rapid rise, I've got to go with the offense just because of what you have option-wise at quarterback. It's not super foreign, I don't think, with this offensive line, despite not having a center per se, right? And I like the skill guys that you can make easy throws to, and I like the quarterback run game with your freshmen.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think you have to assume that the offense is what's going to not peak first, but is going to in a flash become good, right? Mm-hmm. And you've got the skill, you've got the guys that can run, you've got the speed, you've got the athleticism to be a really good offense. And it's something that the Big Ten doesn't see a whole lot other than maybe Ohio State. And you look on the defensive side, and like you said with UCF, they kind of like, they figure it out, but it almost takes a little bit of composure and a little bit of confidence. I mean, look at the Auburn game.
Yeah, the defense like hung in there for the offense, because most of the time the offense is like letting the defense figure it out by the start of the second quarter. They're already up 17-7 or something like that.
Right. And so once they have, it's not that they needed like a cushion on offense or anything. It's almost like you said, they need a big sack, they need a turnover, whatever it is.
They're splash plays.
Exactly.
They're momentum shifting plays.
And like I said, in Auburn, it looked like Auburn had a chance to just run away with it, and then something on the defense just went, oh, okay, we know what we're doing now, and they just figured it out, and they were able
snuffed
to break it
out.
Down. Yeah. And so I think that if, you know, the offense gets really rocking through the first three or four games, something along those lines, and kind of just lets the defense figure out who needs to do what, who needs to be where, I think by the time they roll into Ann Arbor, they potentially could have it figured out.
No, and that'll be fun to see. It'll be so much fun to see where they're at. We'll get to some more college football with Mitch Sherman coming up, Charlie McBride, Jacob Padilla. We'll get into some Husker basketball thoughts, too, with Palmer and Copeland back along with Roby. The topic and discussion point has been expectations for Nebraska basketball next season, because you're in a good mood. Mm-hmm. You're in a good mood, and then you were in a bad mood between the NIT performance, the declarations for the NBA, the loss of Kenya Hunter, and also, oh, by the way, the year extension by Moose. You weren't maybe necessarily in a bad mood that the Moose man gave Tim Miles only a year, but you're just like, okay, it looks so good, and now what's coming back? There's so much uncertainty. Mm-hmm. And as a Nebraska basketball fan, you should kind of be used to that, but everything's turned out okay, where you have your three studs back. It sounds like you've got a really good assistant that knows the conference, and you have an opportunity here to prove it and obviously live up to some pressure and some hype, but you get to rewrite a wrong. Mm-hmm. If you're Nebraska basketball, that wrong that was a preseason top 25 team in 2014 and 15, where you face plant
right
after an NCAA tournament berth. The Honda of Lincoln fan poll you can vote on, and we'll get your take on with the return of James Palmer Jr., Isaac Copeland to Lincoln. Where do you think the Huskers will finish in the 2018-2019 Big Ten standings? First through third, fourth through sixth, seventh through ninth, or the choice that can't be named, which means 10 or worse. You know what, man? As much as I like this team, as good as they are going to be when you have, and I think Hoppin put this tweet out with points and rebounds and assists, we're talking 80 and 78%, and you had upper 8 out of 10 type numbers of what's returning. I think this team, give me choice B, give me door number two. I think they finish fourth through sixth.
Yeah.
And I know Purdue's losing a lot, and will Michigan be better, and what's Sparty going to be like? You know, Ohio State's going to be good. Does Northwestern bounce back? I think the Big Ten, top to bottom, year in, year out, is just too good. As good as Nebraska's got it with these guys coming back, it's going to be a different Big Ten. It's not going to be as easy Big Ten. Now, sometimes they made it look really hard. Sometimes they made it look really easy. But you're going to have a team that really is going to be hunted in Nebraska.
Yeah.
There's going to be no surprise. There's going to be film on these dudes. But you got a little longer time to work on chemistry and perfect what you've already done. The key to me is Glenn going to be back and good?
Better, yeah.
Yeah. Or is he going to be hit or miss offensively, where you've got three other options? What's Roby's growth look like?
Right.
And do you get a duplication of what Cope and Palmer brought you? Do they bring you the same thing, or do they raise their game? They can't go backwards,
right,
and expect these guys to finish 1 through 4. Next year will be a year where the Big Ten has 6 to 7, 8 teams in the tournament. Nebraska gets in. That's kind of all I'm demanding. We'll talk to Mitch Sherman next on Hail Varsity.
He's in his 30s, but sounds like he was born with a stogie in one hand and a brew in the other.
Now, say my name.
It's Schmitty on Hail Varsity Radio.
I got the body of a taut preteen Swedish boy.
Nick Saban will enlighten, make you glad. He's not yelling at you. That audio coming up. Some NBA reaction, some Husker basketball thoughts. Blackshirt McBride, a Monday with Charlie. Now on a Tuesday, and we welcome in with Mitch with ESPN, Mitch Sherman. He's with Mitch Sherman. Mitch Sherman at Mitch Sherman on Twitter, and can read him with ESPN.com and magazine. Mitch, what'd you grill? What'd you cook out this weekend?
I had somebody cooking for me. Isn't that great?
It is.
It's usually me doing the cooking, but we had a barbecue with some steaks and shrimp, and that's mainly what I had on the grill. And then there were hot dogs and hamburgers that others enjoyed, but just a plain old-fashioned, good, nice American sirloin filet. Maybe it was a filet. I don't know. Again, I wasn't cooking it, so I just took what was given to me, and some shrimp. It was outstanding. I was doing that on Sunday night while I was anxiously awaiting the 16 sites to be announced by the NCAA, so I could quickly write a news story about the Stetson Hatters being selected as a regional host in NCAA baseball this weekend.
That's outstanding, and
multitasking, no. Writing about Stetson and eating steak and shrimp. What's more American than that?
Was anybody at the barbecue wearing Stetson?
Stetson, like the I see what you did there, but
the clone.
Nope, no, the Omaha hats. I believe they have branded themselves the Hatters, and they want to get. I would like to see them in Omaha. In fact, I would love if the Atlantic Sun was represented at the College World Series in a couple weeks.
Stetson's a good name, you know, good school, really good program. Let's start there with some college baseball. The big topic has been Illinois being left out, the Big Ten getting, what was it, a total of 4 in, correct?
Correct.
So what's your reaction to that? I know you pay attention to Nebraska baseball, but also have an eye on the Big Ten. Did Illinois belong?
Well, I mean, if you're in the Big Ten, I think the big topic was Illinois getting left out. I know there was some star power on that Illinois team, with one player in particular. If you're in the SEC, the topic of conversation was Kentucky getting left out. You know, if you asked me as an objective bystander, not affiliated with either conference, I would say that Kentucky probably got the shorter end of the stick than Illinois, considering its body of work in and outside of the conference. Kentucky won 13 SEC games. They lost 17, but 13 SEC wins is a pretty good haul considering who the Wildcats beat in the non-conference. And, I think the committee shied away in the case of Kentucky. I know I took this Illinois question and turned it into a Kentucky answer, but
that's all right.
I think that the committee shied away in the case of Kentucky from putting 11 teams from one league into the field. And I don't know that you would get a lot of argument outside of the SEC that any league, anywhere, anytime, deserves more than 10 teams, which is the record. The SEC this year equaled the record for one conference in one postseason. So to spin that back to the Big Ten, if the SEC gets 10, should the Big Ten have 5? I don't know. I think the SEC is probably more than twice the conference that the Big Ten is when it comes to baseball. So if Kentucky's going to get left out, I don't have a problem with Illinois getting left out. And the benefactor to all of that is schools like UNC Wilmington, schools like Northeastern. Actually, I think UNC Wilmington was an automatic bid, but a school like Oklahoma State out of the Big 12, which had 29 wins, getting in as an at-large, or as I mentioned, Northeastern getting in. Those are the benefactors to Kentucky and Illinois being left out. And, you know, this is the conversation that happens in March, and it happens when it comes to baseball on Memorial Day. So there are always going to be that 66th team, and the likelihood that one of those teams would end up in Omaha in 2 weeks is probably slim anyway. So the good thing is we get to go out and see the best teams playing at home this weekend and possibly next weekend too.
How good is Dave Van Horn's Arkansas squad this year? I mean, I know they're ranked, they're a national seed, but is this a team that can do damage and maybe win it?
They can hit, and, you know, it remains to be seen how far that can take you in the new age of the new era of college baseball. And this is an era that's been going on for a good decade now where your pitching and defense have proven to win championships. You can go back to, Cal in 2011, which did that, interestingly, with Dave Esker as the coach. He's now in his first year as the Stanford coach, Stanford trying to make it back to Omaha for the first time in more than a decade. And I talked to Coach Esker today, so look for a story on Friday on ESPN.com about that Stanford regional with Cal State Fullerton, with Baylor out of the Big 12. But that seems to be the strength of this Arkansas team, is that they mash, that they hit the ball. In a different era of college baseball, I would really like their chance to do a lot of damage and score a ton of runs in Omaha and have a chance to win a championship. We'll see if they have enough pitching and enough defense to get it done if the Hogs and Coach Van Horn make it back.
We'll wrap up college baseball with Coach Childress and Coach Bolt down at A&M. They're in the Austin Regional. They're the 3-seed. Indiana's in there as a 2-seed, Texas Southern, and then Texas. What's been good about this A&M team, and what's caused them to be a 3-seed other than where they live in the SEC?
Public enemy number one in Austin this weekend. It has happened that Texas and Texas A&M have gotten together on the baseball diamond since the Aggies split from the Big 12. We're still waiting to see it in football, but they have played. They have played out of conference, so it's not like this is a first, but I think any time they get together, especially this time of year, when there is so much at stake, it's there's going to be a lot of juices flowing. If I had my choice of one regional to go to, I might pick Oregon State, because I would love to see that Oregon State LSU rematch on the Beavers' home field after LSU beat Oregon State twice to knock Pat Casey's team out of the championship series before it got to the championship series last year in Omaha. But a close second would be Austin, in hopes that you would get a matchup, and Texas A&M is going to have to beat Indiana to make that happen, but in hopes that you would get a matchup between the Aggies and the Horns. My read on Texas A&M is that they do what Coach Childress teams have traditionally done, and that is that they can pitch the ball and they can get you out, and they ran into some good bats in the SEC like Arkansas and Dave Van Horn's team. And, they, like Kentucky, had a losing record in the conference. But unlike Kentucky, Texas A&M lives to see another day because of its total body of work. And it will be that would be fun. That'd be fun to see Texas and Texas A&M go at it. And it'll be an emotionally charged weekend for sure in Austin, too, as the memories of Augie Garrido are very thick and very much in everyone's mind. And I think not just in the minds of the Texas players, but, you know, he was a mentor really to everyone in college baseball. And the fact that Texas won the Big 12 in the season, in the year that Augie passed away, and now is hosting a regional in this same year, you know, I think that will be on the minds of not just the Longhorns, but people like Rob Childress and Will Bolt, who, you know, really cut their teeth in this game around Augie Garrido. You know, he was on the other side in the other dugout, but, you know, they would tell you too. I can assure you they would say that they have a ton of respect for what he did for college baseball, and to be able to go into that stadium in the year that he passed away, you know, that energy and that emotion is likely going to favor Texas.
Mitch, want to switch gears and end with Nebraska basketball. Tim Miles gets good news. James Palmer Jr. is back. So is Copeland. And from an expectation standpoint, and I know you spend a lot of time with college football and college baseball, but you keep your ear to the ground from where you live. Does this make things better or amp up the the expectation / pressure for Tim Miles? How do you view it?
Like, yeah, yes on both.
Okay.
Yes on both.
So, but is it a half? Is it? It's a better problem to have them back versus going into a season without them,
oh,
right?
Gosh.
I mean,
oh,
come
gosh.
On.
I mean, yeah. I mean, if you said, "Hey, you can give up Palmer and Copeland or Copeland and Roby, and you know, two of the three or three of the three or one of the three." But you know, you're going to have lower expectations and not as much is not going to be anticipated out of your program. I mean, Tim Miles would any coach would take the pressure and the expectations in order to have that kind of experience and production back. I mean, Copeland is 23 years old and Roby is just, I mean, you can see him just blossoming before your eyes into an outstanding player. I think when it's all said and done, you know, my opinion on from watching those guys last winter and spring is that Roby's going to end up probably being the best of all of them at the next level. And then Palmer was just your leading scorer and your go-to guy for the most part during the season. So, hey, when the season ended and all three of those guys said they were going to put their name into the draft pool and get feedback, you know, just knowing the way that college basketball works and the thirst of players, especially older players, to get to the NBA or just get to professional basketball, even if it's overseas, and that, you know, the way that the just the transient nature of the sport and the fact that players don't stay at one place for very long, you know, I'd have thought, hey, if they get two of them back, they're doing really, really well. I would have maybe put the number at like one or one and a half if you're setting it over under. So, you know, the hay isn't in the barn. As we've seen in the past, you know, things can still change when you get into the summer, but it's looking very good, I would say, at this point, that all three, you know, they're, none of them are going to the NBA. All three of them are coming back to college, it seems, and it appears they're all coming back to Nebraska. So that's fantastic for Tim Miles, and it's fantastic for Nebraska basketball that there's going to be expectations and there's going to be preseason predictions that the Huskers are going to be in the Big Dance and that they're going to finish in the top part of the Big Ten. So, I mean, you got Scott Frost to look forward to in the fall, and now you got hoops to look forward to in November, from November through March. So, you know, all the tide is rising, I guess, at Nebraska in terms of its premier sports.
That is good news and good stuff from Mitch Sherman, ESPN.com and Magazine. Mitch, we'll run you down next week, talk a little more college baseball. We'll be into super regional territory then. And we'll figure out what's going on around the world of sports as well. Appreciate your time, man. Thanks for your input.
Absolutely. Good to talk to you, Chris.
See you, bud. Take care. All right. There he is, Mitch Sherman, at Mitch Sherman on Twitter, ESPN.com. How about you go see Rick? How about you go see Sauter Heyman? How about you find out about Pure Grown Diamonds, Nebraska's exclusive dealer of Pure Grown Diamonds, Sauter Heyman. 100% real diamonds grown in a lab instead of mined from the earth. They're 10 to 40% less than traditional earth mine diamonds. They're eco-friendly. They're 100% sustainable, and they're there for you. Nebraska's exclusive dealer of Pure Grown Diamonds, Sauter Heyman. 12th and O downtown, Lincoln, South Point Pavilion, Lincoln, out west in Grand Island. Log on now, sauterheyman.com. We'll talk some NBA. Western Conference Game 7 next.
And we're back.
Fellas, you think we could listen to the radio?
On Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
We'll hear from James Harden, Steve Kerr, Mike D'Antoni, next hour. We'll get into some Husker Hoop Sots with Jacob Padilla, with Palmer and Copeland back again with Robes in a little less than 45 minutes. And Mr. Blackshirt Charlie McBride will join us, can tap the line. Shillingbridge Court can tap house. Let's do that. 466-377-6800. 825-5865. So YouTube games. It's the off season. You're maybe watching or searching for football to check out with a Nebraska flavor. And I love jumping on the Hail Varsity message board from time to time to chime in, because the best games with Nebraska on YouTube. And I didn't put a top 10 list together, but like one of the most underrated games. And we were going to get into some NBA here, but Colton's like, dude, let's talk about that Missouri game. Because we were talking offenses and the 2010 Nebraska offense, and they just backhanded Missouri repeatedly. Like, the best, like, worst game I've watched on YouTube, and I made Junior sit down and watch it, because he's like, Dad, I'm trying to teach him about Nebraska football. I grew up going to 9-3 seasons where the worst they did was finish 10th, right? Mm-hmm. He has seen them upset Michigan State, and he may – he remembers Kenny and Rex, or Wex, as he used to say it, because he had a hard time pronouncing his R's. Okay? So he gets them, but he's not seeing a top 10 Nebraska team. That 2010 team was the last time they were there.
Mm-hmm.
So I showed him, like, the 89 Colorado game. Nebraska played a really good Buffs team, and Nebraska lost, and it was tough, but it was a really good ball game. Really good ball game. Two awesome teams. Like, Colorado played for a national championship and lost. That was sweet. The point is they were at that caliber. Both of them were phenomenal. They were great, two great teams. 89 Nebraska, 89 Colorado. So that's one that I kicked on like 2 weeks ago before this story came out on HailVarsity.com or was reposted.
Mm-hmm.
And Colton, your kind of go-to is what? You go at the Missouri game?
No, I was just
the 2010 Missouri game. That's what you'll watch either on the Big Ten Network or you'll see it on YouTube.
You know, something like that. I think that and BTN does a good job with their Nebraska classics,
right,
or whatever, you know. And so you get kind of your choice, and it's cool that they also dip back into the Big 12 games for their Nebraska classics, because, I mean, you have to.
Mm-hmm.
It's only right. But, you know, going through Brandon's list, like, I know I've rewatched at least most of the 2015 Michigan State game.
Sure. What exactly and how exactly did that happen?
Yeah. And, you know, and I think I did a class project or an audio project on it. So it's like, you know, kind of not force myself to rewatch it, but it's kind of one of those you go back
that
and
was
like,
fun.
This is incredible. And then he also had on here the 2009 Big 12 championship. As much as you want to say no one's gone back and looked at it, you've gone back and looked at it.
I swear to you, there was a time on Friday nights where I would do, we'd do the show in Omaha Saturday mornings.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd crash at Kranach's house. Okay, and his wife would send us downstairs, and I'm allergic to cats, and his freaking cats would come with, and we'd watch the Big 12 championship game where, you know, there was animal abuse by Sue on Bevo in Texas. So he'd watch that, and then he would slow-mo it, because he's really close with Lane Grendel,
mm-hmm,
and he'd slow-mo the 1 second,
yeah,
and then there's Lane on the sideline getting ready to find Bo. And there's fist pumping going on. He's like, look, he thinks we won. He thinks so. Long and short, that's one game that I think Kranach still has to this day on his DVR.
Wow.
He's moved twice, but I think he still has the game on his DVR.
Well, and what was so funny too is
you can just watch that game and go, man, you're watching it, and if you're a Nebraska fan, you're like proud of him.
Yeah, and I know Danny asked when we did the show last week. He asked me what like my first like sports heartbreak was, and that the 2009 year was,
sure,
one of them, because the Phillies should have won back-to-back World Series.
You were a Phillies fan?
Yeah.
And I'm, at least I'm, that year?
Yeah. Well, I'm starting to try to get back into it because they, I mean, they hit a tailspin real fast. But, and so then that happens, and then, you know, they kind of regroup, and then they lose to Oklahoma the next year. But I was on Watch ESPN the other day, and the Longhorn Network was showing a re-air of the 2009 Big 12 championship game. And I was like, are they still living in that moment? Because that's,
well, they, dude, that's the last time they were good.
That's what I mean.
That's like, the last time they were good. I mean, yeah. They played Bama for the championship. I think what Nebraska did to Texas in that 09 game, I think Alabama's coaches flipped that on, and they're like, well, yeah, we don't have a Sue, but, man, we got a bunch of dudes as good as that defense, mm-hmm. or in that ballpark.
Right.
Okay? And Texas can be bullied and beaten up and slapped around. I think what Sue and Nebraska did to Texas in 09 eliminated any fear Alabama was going to have. Because that was year three, and that was Bama's first championship under Saban.
Mm-hmm.
And watching what Nebraska did probably gave Alabama confidence, mm-hmm. that if Nebraska can do it as good as they are on one side of the ball, we know how good our offense is. I think Ingram won the Heisman that year. They were going to run the football.
Yep.
They had a great offensive line. They said game over by watching the Big 12 championship game. That broke Texas in half. They were never the same.
Yeah, well, and you got to think, too, McCoy probably was – not 100% by the time he went into Alabama, and then he gets
in the
championship
smoked.
Game.
I mean,
so.
He probably doesn't remember the last 3 minutes.
But, and I've talked about it too, the thing that frustrated me about that game the most is the fact that they had so many opportunities in the red zone and so many opportunities to score touchdowns that if one of those field goals was a touchdown, the defense was good enough to stop Texas.
But you know what, man? It was a sign of things to come early because they lost that year to Virginia Tech 16-15.
Yeah.
They had 5 field goals.
Yep.
They had that Virginia Tech game won. They got 100.5. Who goes, by the way, to Virginia Tech and runs for 100-plus yards? Oh, Roy Helu does. Right? And then a year later, he goes for 3 bills against Missouri. I don't know. No, it's just... You saw where Nebraska was 8-9 years ago, kind of on that cusp of getting back to 10-2, 10-3, quality wins. And you had to leave. You had to move leagues.
Yeah.
You had to take the payday. You're in a really good conference with really good coaches, and now it's time to kind of come back up, rise back up if you're Nebraska, and do so on offense. But you know, what can you get out of your defense? We'll talk with Coach McBride about that. A Mondays with Charlie. We'll turn to a Tuesday with Charlie. Coach McBride on the way. We will run down Jacob Padilla. Hope you're doing well. Kind of shaking off the extended weekend and the holiday. Hope you had ribs and chicken and steak. It was delish. We'll wind down hour one. Hail Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Coming up, Charlie McBride will be with us. Jacob Padilla of Hail Varsity. Chris Schmidt, Colton Stone. Hope you're doing okay. You might have noticed that a different soybean sign in your neighbor's field this year. It's AgriGold. Our customers now have access to select soybean varieties direct to their farm. The AgriGold way, with high expectations for every seed that goes into the ground. The approach to soybeans, no different. High-performance soybeans from a brand you already know. For more info, visit agrigold.com. Let's get into hoops here for a second. With Palmer and Copeland and Roby and Glenn on the way back with Robertson, an option at 3. That's pretty good. Is it Nana? Is that how you say it?
I think so. Yeah. Aachen? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, we'll let Jacob pronounce that one. It's supposed to be our profession, but maybe not. No, so listen, man, there are plenty of options for Nebraska basketball. to do some good things, to do some big things. I just, is there a part of you that is wait and see?
A little bit.
I mean, it's, I didn't expect all three to come back.
No, I thought one would maybe, you know, I think Mitch said it, kind of test potentially the foreign market just to maybe get a year of pro basketball overseas and then then come back and maybe try to work out for the NBA if they didn't get enough interest.
Sure.
And I guess with the Honda poll, I think that 4-6 is probably where you expect them to end up. Just because,
I think they have to end up there to get to the tournament.
And you can list five Big Ten teams any given year that could finish above Nebraska unless Nebraska just plays outstanding.
Sure.
But I think you just have 2015 or 2014 like in the back of your mind at all times, and you just hope and pray that they can come back and bring everybody back and have it work out.
And this is a fact check on me. I said Thomas Robertson. That's a very good basketball player for Pius.
Oh, well.
It's not Thomas Allen.
Close enough, right?
Right.
They both play in Nebraska.
I was thinking Thomas. Thomas. What Thomas do I know? Thomas Allen. You saw him play great minutes and shoot well against Kansas. Mm-hmm. So you know he's got the ability. Amir Harris, what can he do at point for you? You have that pressure to produce. And that's the one thing is your head coach. He's went out. He's got a good assistant. He's got his three big dogs to return.
Mm-hmm.
And now, can he take that step forward as a favorite, as a have versus a have not?
Mm-hmm.
Can you live up to what you've been building for? Think about this payoff for him. Get your dudes back. You've been questioned. Your tenure here has been questioned by the fan base after a 23-win season. And now it's like, okay, now you can show them the doubters.
Right.
Shut up the doubters. Prove to your boss. Prove to your guys on the roster. So it's what you're asking for. And you've got a full hand here at the proverbial poker table of college basketball to do it. Coach McBride, he's next on Hail Varsity.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz _ radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Great to have you back. Hour two at Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Colton Stone, and we hope, we think, maybe Coach Charlie McBride. Maybe. Well, that hurts. We'll try. We'll keep trying him. Or he may reach through the phone and bop us over the head. That's okay, too. Can tap the line, Chilling Bridge Court, can tap house. Let's you do that, 466-3776, 800-825-5865. I've been instructed to give a shout-out to my favorite baseball team. That is the Lincoln A's, as they get ready to do battle in Walton, Nebraska tonight. They're warming up, but I've been told to yell at Mother Nature to stay away so they can win. Jacob Padilla is coming up. Next segment, we'll get his take on Husker hoops, get his thoughts on some NBA. We haven't really touched on Game 7 last night of the NBA. We spent some time talking YouTube Husker football games. Which one's kind of your go-to? Colton's a big 2010 Missouri guy. I like watching the old Colorado-Nebraska rivalry games. From the late 80s to the early 90s, about a 4 or 5 year window. All right, there. Hey, if he isn't answering, let him call us. It's fine. So we did that. We talked a little bit about Nebraska's offense and where the defense can be. So that's good. And then, yeah, James Palmer and Isaac Copeland are back together for a big year for Nebraska basketball. Can tap the line, Chilling Bridge Court, can tap house. Let's do that. 466-377-6800-825-5865. And what's funny is kind of the narrative around last night with the Houston Rockets, specifically with James Harden. And this guy is getting beat up. He's getting murdered. The Houston Chronicle's column is very fair, and it's not personal. But man, do they go over it. And I remember those days growing up as a Nebraska fan where you go 10-2, you're not appreciated, and there's a straight-up struggle to get to the top, and you're not at the top, but you're right there, and you can, like, touch it. That's how good Nebraska football was for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. What's going to become of the Rockets, I don't know. But there are two lines in the Houston Chronicle on James Harden that and this team and this game last night. One, suicide was committed in an NBA playoff game last night. That was the Rockets.
Yeah.
That was their shot selection. That was their decision making. That's hilarious. Suicide was committed in an NBA playoff game. Ending your own life, going 7 of 44 from three-point land because you just refused to drive. The other, great, get questioned. Very good players have been doubted. The greats, okay, you can question them, but you really do know the answer. Is this guy ever going to get it done? Is it ever going to happen? Very good players have been doubted. So let me ask you this. From a basketball standpoint, do you see beyond LeBron, Klay Thompson? Do you see Steph Curry? Do you see KD? Do you see Harden? Are those guys like greats? And before you throw things at me through the radio, I think they're very, very good, and I know they're champions. Mm-hmm. To me, last night, what Steph Curry did kind of reaffirmed his greatness. The problem I have with Steph is if you sneeze on him or look at him funny, he gets hurt. He's soft. He's extremely talented. He took over the third quarter. Mm-hmm. And then there's Durant. You want to talk about a one-dimensional player? That one dimension's awesome when it comes to his scoring.
Right.
But he wasn't gritty. He wasn't going after it. He wasn't mixing it up. He wasn't going for rebounds. He was letting guys half a foot tall crush him.
Yeah.
He's weak. He's soft. And I get why people now hate on the guy from time to time. I totally get it. But man, he was good when he needed to be scoring, but it took somebody else lifting that weight, putting it on their shoulders in the form of Steph Curry. Mm-hmm. He got going. And I think your glue guy that's incredible at scoring is Klay Thompson. I think he's good. He doesn't panic. He busts his butt. He's pretty blue-collar. He's not super Hollywood.
Right.
I think Curry and KD are pretty Hollywood. And then you look at Harden. And the guy can be phenomenal. He can get his teammates involved. He can lob it in. But when push comes to shove, man, everyone takes their cue from him. Mm-hmm. And he's still a really good number two, not a number one from a personality and a deliverer standpoint. You still had to have Chris Paul.
See, and that was the trouble is you don't know. I don't want to say the game would have gone much different with Chris Paul, but the thing is as good as Harden is, as good as he can be, whether he's playing point or shooting guard, you need someone else that's more of a facilitator than a scorer because Chris Paul's not out there playing ISO ball. But Harden's going to go out there, and if he takes the ball up the court, it's probably going to be ISO ball. And that's just like how it is. And then you're a terrible 0 for 27 after starting 6 of 14 and only make one more after that. And, I mean, the Rockets and the Celtics killed themselves the same way. They took too many shots that they didn't need to, and they needed twos. And think about all the shots they missed. If they're twos, they're catching up. But they just relied on shooting threes. And it's
what's wrong with trying to get some points in the paint? And I get trading twos for threes is bad math.
Right.
But it comes down to needing a score, not going X number of possessions in a row where you don't score.
Exactly.
And can I say that basketball, I was intrigued about last night. It hurt that Chris Paul wasn't there. It really killed him because they would have won with Chris Paul, I believe. But, man, they are such a tough team. And this is all kind of Golden State's fault.
Mm-hmm.
Since they came into the league with the Splash Brothers, let's jack a three up in transition and not take it to the rim on a fast break. That's like your new normal in basketball now, and it's trickled down to Y ball. Let's shoot from as far away as possible versus getting a better shot.
Right.
It's the big play versus the smart play, and Houston didn't execute the smart play last night. Golden State waited till the third quarter to do it, but at least they did it.
And the thing, too, is the Warriors have killed themselves in games by shooting too many transition threes or having a lead, and they blow it because they are ingrained to do that as their offense. But the part is if it's not working and you're giving the other
team at least
so
would
much
go
time,
to the rim though.
Exactly. And so that's what they figured out is if it's not working, they can rely on going to the rim. And you know, both the Celtics and both the Rockets had leads, and then they just started taking threes. Like, with a lead, and I know, like you said, twos for threes, it's bad math. If you make those threes, it's good. But if you don't make the threes, you might as well, with a lead, take some points here and there.
Everyone's going nuts on the officiating, too. And while I thought it wasn't great,
Clay had three fouls in 3 minutes.
No, I know. But I'm saying the Harden three in the early part of the third quarter that could have bumped it from a 14-point ball game to maybe an 18-point ball game. Here's what happened. You had Harden. Clay turned his head, had his left arm extended. Hand was on the chest of Harden. Harden, like, trapped him with his forearm and then got a shot up like he was fouled. Mm-hmm. That's the crap he's doing. Oh, look at the manager in the corner. Here comes the dude with the steel chair. That type of antics. Harden asked last night if he's let himself get to the what-if part. What if CP3 would have played?
We don't even think about that. You know, we had an opportunity tonight in last game without Chris. Obviously, he's a big part of what, you know, why we're here. But we had opportunities, especially in that first half, both games.
You did, and you shot from three instead of got to the rim. I mean, the way they closed the gap in the fourth quarter, I mean, there was some go ahead and take it, let's just let time burn, but they at least got to the rim and finished. Cut it. They had a chance. Down six with five minutes left to go. D'Antoni, very gracious to Golden State. We'll see if they regroup. And again, the question is, you know, where is James Harden? Greats get questioned. Is this guy great? Well, yeah, he just won a championship. The very good are doubted. And right now, Harden is doubted. He's good. He's very, very good. He's going to win an MVP. But is he great? And you got to solidify greatness with a championship. Here is D'Antoni.
I would say to set the bar for the whole league, not just us. We know where we have to go. We feel like we're really close. And we just need a good summer of work, good summer of, you know, we turned it on defensively, I think, from the All-Star break on. That will not slip. We'll get even better there. And so, I mean, I'm obviously optimistic just because the guys we're dealing with and the winners. And, you know, we keep knocking on the door. It'll eventually open.
You hope. I mean, you have too much talent down there. You've developed. You've got a really good team. You know, what was the difference in last night, in the last two nights? for Houston. Here is James Harden again.
One half of basketball. Two games. Game six and seven. One half of basketball. We just didn't have the same energy that we had in that first half. Our pace. So it's extremely frustrating.
You know what sucks energy out? Shots. Mm-hmm. Like you're jacking around in the backyard. Is that too old? Do I sound like too much of an old man?
No, because...
Or did you watch last night, and let's be honest, the last two nights, mm-hmm. the last three games, Eastern Finals, Boston's fourth quarter, and then both Houston and Golden State game six and seven, where it's let's play horse. Let's throw up some jackass three versus going to the rim and putting somebody away. I don't get how that's allowed. I don't get it. And I understand that you got to stick with the process and stay confident if you are who you are. But there's no rule that says you can't shoot closer.
Right.
And why, out of pride, out of ego, out of spite, try and win and live by the three if you're dying by the three?
Yeah, and like I said, even Golden State had it happen to them in this exact same series where they had a you know double-digit lead and then blew it by taking a bunch of threes. It's not – I mean, it's ugly basketball. It is.
When you're missing.
And when at one point you're a professional basketball team shooting 15% from beyond the arc, I mean, if there's a time to stop, that's the time. Like, I don't know if there's a better time.
What's your plan for the intervention? What type of intervention's needed?
I think everyone's like – You know, they say
you lose 3 points if you miss a three.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's the thing is
you're taking an uncontested 3-on-1. Let's pull up from three. You should lose 3 points.
And I get that everyone's saying, like, do you have to match what Golden State does? Do you have to? It's just that they've been built to shoot transition threes, they've been built to take 33 pointers in a game. But I think they've also realized, as they've lost games in the same way, that if it's not working, it's not working. Like, we got guys that can score.
Don't be afraid to shoot it, but go get the best shot. Let's get some points.
Exactly. And I don't know if that's just Kerr being Kerr or what it is. But, I mean, they've made four straight NBA finals, so something's working.
Here's my other question. Do you have more respect, still zero respect, or the same amount of respect for Golden State? Here's what I noticed. And with Golden State, they're a team that is so hard to look at and go, they're great. They're phenomenally talented, mm-hmm. but I think the one ingredient of grittiness takes away a lot for me.
Yeah.
And that's with two of their three stars. You can hate Draymond, but he'll put in some blue-collar work. You can think Clay's a space cadet, but he'll put in some blue-collar work. Steph was playing better defensively. Even though he had a really good second half, I lost a lot of respect for Durant because he needed to scrap it up, and he couldn't and chose not to. He didn't want to get his hands dirty. That's Durant. And for most of his career, it's been Steph, not wanting to get his hands dirty. Steph's saving grace is the guy came to the rescue and put on a monster 8-0 run privately to take the lead.
Yeah, they're just...
He executed and had guts to do it.
Yeah, and I guess they're just one... flaw against them is they're too flashy at times, and I think you still have to respect them as a basketball team, though.
I think you do, but I lost respect for Durant, which is hard to do because that kind of already went out the window.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Jacob Padilla of Hail Varsity joins us now at @JacobPadilla_. Big news of the weekend, the gang back together, the band back together for Tim Miles with his big three. Jacob, how are you, man? What's new?
I'm doing well. Not a whole lot new. Just some good news and in Nebraska basketball land.
Absolutely, and they had a lot of bad or discouraging news. A tough run there between just look at the timeline of no NCAA, bad NIT loss, kind of a disappointing way to end the year. Kenya says adios. And then three of your studs say, let's go check the NBA out. Meanwhile, you make what seems to be a pretty good assistant hire to replace Kenya. We'll see. And you get your three dudes back. It kind of did a 180 here. What are your expectations? You've seen the team. You cover them on a daily basis, Jacob. What do you think this team can be in fit into the landscape of where the Big Ten's at right now?
Yeah, I was just looking through some of the Big Ten rosters and as far as who's coming back, who's bringing what recruiting classes in. And I think Nebraska is going to have a chance to be in that top half of the conference, top five range, kind of where they were this past year, except I think it'll mean more next season if they can do it. I think a lot of these teams that either underperformed last year or maybe were some of those teams that were towards the top, I think they're bringing in a lot of talent. So I think the league is going to be better next season. But, I mean, Nebraska is going to be one of the more experienced teams in the league. You bring back four of your top five scorers, most of your rotation. You just got to find a couple of guards and maybe someone else to add some depth in the front court, and then they're going to be good. So I think if they can improve a little bit, get that shooting up a little bit, kind of figure out that offense a little bit more, get some development from some of the young guys, I think they're going to have a chance to compete with everybody in the league.
Who is kind of the class or favorite as it looks right now in the Big Ten?
That's a tough one. I mean, Michigan State's always going to be up there. You just look at the guys that have got coming back. Nick Ward just announced that he's coming back. He tested the waters. You got Cassius Winston and Joshua Langford, their backcourt, plus Matt McQuaid. So they got some good guard play. And then they've got a strong recruiting class coming in. Maybe not as strong as they've had in the past. They don't necessarily have any five stars or anything. But Michigan State, I think, is going to be good again. Purdue lost a lot. Ohio State lost a lot. I think Michigan's going to be right up there. They had some young guys like Jordan Poole and Isaiah Livers play really well last season. If Charles Matthews returns to school, you got Xavier Simpson at point guard. John Teske's a big dude inside. And then they've got a top 15 recruiting class nationally coming in. So it's Michigan. And then another one I throw in there is Maryland. Kevin Herter is another one we're waiting on as far as the NBA decision. He could potentially be a first-round pick if he stays in the draft. Bruno Fernando has already announced that he's coming back. They're big man. And they've got Anthony Cowan, one of the better point guards in the league, a couple other good role players, and then they've got a top 10 recruiting class coming in with a five-star, a few four-stars. So they're going to be young, but they're going to, I think, have the experience and the leadership if Herter does come back, in addition to the talent of that recruiting class, that'll make them one of the favorites in the league as well. So those are a few of the teams that I'm kind of looking at that Nebraska's going to have to compete with.
We mentioned here Jacob Bedillo with us, HaleVarsity.com and Magazine, Basketball Insider with Husker Hoops, and you have Nana and Thomas Allen. What can Nana do for his introduction to this team role-wise? Thomas Allen, I keep thinking of that Kansas game. What he did from three-point land, some of the big shots he hit and made, and then kind of went away for a while, and you saw him. And I'm asking about both those guys in reference to, okay, Glenn Watson, what you get from him his senior year, and, you know, getting this thing two steps forward from an already good year last year.
Yeah, you definitely are going to need at least one of Allen and Nana Kenton and Thorby Arnarson to emerge as kind of, whether that's that starter next to Palmer and Watson, or even if you come off the bench, you start a bigger lineup, you're going to need at least one of those guys to emerge as a heavy rotation player. And I think Allen is definitely the favorite to be that, just based on the experience he had last year. I think bringing in Amir Harris, the 6'5 point guard in this 2018 class that Miles picked up late, I think bringing in, him in will actually help Allen. It'll allow him to be more of kind of off-the-ball scorer. He doesn't have to worry about running the offense as a point guard as much. Meanwhile, Harris is big enough that he can guard opposing twos and let Allen take on one. So I kind of like that backcourt combination potential with their young guards coming off the bench. So I think Allen should kind of show a little bit more of what made him such a highly touted recruit coming into last season. But I think even beyond that, what happens next season is going to come down to Glenn Watson Jr. Which guy comes back next season? Is it the same guy that couldn't buy a bucket all season long, or is it the guy that kind of figured things out as a sophomore and started to knock down shots or was 40% three-point shooter? Because if Watson continues to struggle, then Nebraska is going to fall into the same trap again of going through these offensive these lulls where you just don't score and you fall behind teams, because if you only have to worry about one guard, it's a lot easier to take away Palmer if you don't have to necessarily worry about Watson as a floor spacer or even as a creator himself. So I think that this team's ceiling is going to be determined by what happens with Glenn Watson Jr. if he can get back on track.
Do you think this will be a different song and verse for Tim Miles? This is the second time he's going to have kind of a big three coming back. It didn't go well 2014, 2015. Do you think he's learned from that?
I think so, and I think Armon Gates actually helped in that area too, because Northwestern kind of had the same thing last year where they made the tournament and got their first win. And then this last year, all the guys on the team, they're bringing everybody back, and the guys were kind of celebrating, I guess you could say, over the offseason, kind of taking things for granted, and they didn't put in the same amount of work that they did 2 years ago. And it showed on the court once the season rolled around, and Northwestern was one of the more disappointing teams in the league. And I think Gates, that's something that he really talked about during his introductory press conference, and then Miles kind of chipped in on that as well, just talking about kind of the experience of them going through that and knowing, like, hey, we got to focus here. We haven't done anything yet. We've got a chance to do something special here if you guys are willing to put in the work and stay locked in. So I think Gates' presence and then, like you said, Miles' kind of experience with that last team will both help Nebraska kind of build from here as opposed to kind of falling back like they have in the past.
Jacob Padilla is with us, Husker Basketball Insider, HailVarsity.com, and magazine at JacobPadilla_. Jacob, did you ever have a team miss 27 consecutive threes you were playing?
I don't believe so. I mean, at my level, it's tough to get up that many threes.
My question is, though, if at some point the threes weren't going down, would you tell your guys to drive it, or would they know to do so?
Yeah, the problem is, I mean, that's crazy. You do probably need to get something else going, but at the same time, if that's what you do, are you really going to have more success doing something you're not as good at? I mean, those were good looks that they were getting. It's tough to suddenly change everything that you're doing just because it isn't working. Like, they believed in the system that got
there's a plan B, though, for everybody, right?
Well, there is. I mean, but I think that plan B was Chris Paul, and he was sitting on the bench with
fair enough.
Yeah, but he's kind of that guy, like, along with Harden. Like, if Harden's struggling, you had Paul as that secondary creator who could do something else. I mean, you look at the roster. Eric Gordon took it to the basket a few times with nice finishes, but there aren't a lot of guys on that team, especially if they were playing, that are that kind of player. You got a lot of spot-up guys, a lot of cutters, a lot of defensive-type players around Harden and Paul, in theory. And without Paul, that's one less option and kind of makes it tough. It's just unfortunate that we didn't get to see kind of Houston at full strength go at Golden State, because I really wanted to see Golden State pushed and to see what they could do.
They were already. I mean, they were without Paul. They were pushed twice, and they found a way. Last thought here, Chucky Hepburn is tremendous talent. Nebraska's offered him. Give us a lowdown of Chucky, his talents, and who else is after him. And I mean, Nebraska hasn't done a lot of in-state recruiting or landing, to be honest, the last several years.
Yep.
So kind of give me the lowdown on where Nebraska can go and Chucky Hepburn's interest, I guess, in being a Nebraska kid going to Nebraska.
Yeah, Chucky, he's 2021, so he just finished his freshman year of high school. He's a point guard from Bellevue West, right. And he is, for my money, the best player in the class by far. And it's a good class, too. There's already three players now with D1 offers, and I think he's the best of the bunch. He's a smart player, like super high IQ, really good reaction time, great hands. He's skilled. He can hit shots. He can knock down jumpers off the dribble or spot up. He's athletic enough to get to the rim and finish. He's got really good vision as a point guard. He's just pretty much the complete package as far as what you're looking for in a point guard. And he's great work ethic, too. I've been watching for a little bit now, and he's having a great spring for Team Factory on the AAU circuit. Chucky's definitely going to be a name that you're going to hear over the next 3 years over and over again. And Nebraska did a great job, I think. Tim Miles saw him play one game last year when they played against Lincoln Southwest, and I'm sure he caught his eye there. He's definitely, I think, worth tracking, and it was a good job by Nebraska. Get in early because he's talked in the past about Oregon and Creighton as schools that he kind of like grew up dreaming of getting recruited by and could see himself playing for. So I think Nebraska did a good job here of, hey, come see what we've got to offer, and I think you want to put us in that same group as well. And he checked out campus today. They kind of showed him what they've got to offer. And, obviously, I mean, they've got their facilities are as good as anybody. So I think that was a great move by Tim Miles making that offer now.
Well, we'll keep it locked in with you at @JacobBadilla_ on Twitter, HaleVarsity.com and Magazine on Chucky's recruitment process. Good stuff, good work on Nebraska and Coach Miles this weekend. Jacob, we'll get caught up again. We'll talk some finals next week. Thanks for the time today.
Sounds good. Thanks.
Take care, bud. There he is, Jacob Badilla, Husker Hoops extraordinaire there with HaleVarsity.com.
Chime in 402-466-ESPN or email the show, chris@halevarsity.com.
Just try me. Try me.
Back to Hale Varsity Radio.
Well, did you hear Nick Saban's cranked up? You raising both hands that you're surprised? We'll have that for you. Good stuff from Jacob Badilla. Want to remind you, Hale Varsity Radio today can find the podcast. Real easy. HaleVarsity.com. Get to iTunes. Select portions and segments will be posted on HaleVarsity. Check that ESPN. Lincoln.com. I'm shaking off the holiday cobwebs. Like, once I take a day off, I can't wait to take another day off. No, I really honestly, like, I miss coming in here. I don't know what to do with myself with 2 days of doing nothing. That was a Saturday and a Sunday and a Monday. Mm-hmm. This Friday, you hooligans again are taking over. The Lincoln Orthopedic Open is going on, so I will be losing golf balls at Wilderness Ridge on Friday.
It's not a bad way to spend a Friday, though.
No, it's all good. I mean, take a breather here or there.
No, I know what you mean, though. There's times where... You know, like I'll
you gotta shake the cobwebs.
Yeah, I'll cover one of Danny's shifts, or he'll cover one of mine, and it's either, you know, then you're in here 3 days or 2 days in a row, and then you aren't here for 2 or 3 days. It's like, wow, what do I do with myself?
Hmm. No, exactly. And like today, there was some fun stuff. Yeah. We got into YouTubes and Husker games and that 2010 team. A little bit. I mean, we're never going to not talk Nebraska football. We've done a pretty solid job of covering the Huskers. I mean, oh, yeah. Miles won the lottery this weekend.
Yeah.
Right?
And, I mean, what more could you have really asked for? You know what I mean? Like, you get all three of them
back. You get
back.
All three back. He won the lottery. So is he going to be the one lottery winner that you don't read about just screwing it up? Because if you win the lottery... and except those who play and win the Nebraska lottery, of course, presented by the Nebraska lottery. right? Because how many times you read about some dude down in Florida, Louisiana, or California, hey, we won the lottery. Let's buy a live shark.
Yeah.
Let's put it in the backyard. Let's try and tame a cobra, because I played a recorder in grade school.
Oh, jeez.
Live tigers, they rock. They'll love me. No, they won't.
Yeah, no, it seems like...
Things go from bad to worse. If you can't manage money and you haven't had money, and then you get a lot of money.
Yeah.
I.e., you've managed these guys. You manage them to 23 wins. You've been hacked off since you got, air quote, dissed by the tournament. You're going to have a good Big Ten, well-respected Big Ten.
Mm-hmm.
No shot in hell that it's only a four-bid Big Ten for 2 years in a row. That doesn't happen.
I'm still surprised it happened once, you
sure.
know. And, no, you're right. It's one of those.
You have a chance to go quantity and quality, my friend, with wins.
Yeah.
Because your non-con next year's going to be good.
Yeah, I haven't. Oh, who do they play in the non-con? That's real tough. Oh, not tough, but a bigger name. They play Seton Hall.
Mm-hmm.
They'll play Creighton like they always do. And then, obviously, you know, the Big Ten schedule is not easy ever. I'm not sure who they got in the ACC Challenge. I don't know if they've announced
that. Well, he's asking
yet,
for Duke.
Danny and I talked about that. I don't know if it'd be awesome.
He's played him before, man.
But at the same
Coach
time,
Miles last year at Colorado State, he played. It's like, bring it on. Let's go play at Cameron. They did. I think they got rocked, but they get a lot of brownie points.
For doing it.
For doing it. I think they were an 11 or a 13. Well, they might have been an 11 or 12 seed Colorado State team. Maybe I'm hosing them there. Maybe they were an 11 seed.
Sounds about right.
But what got them in as like the last Mountain West team to get in was what they did on the road. Their aggressiveness. They were rewarded for it. In the non-con. And they tried to be all right this year, too. They just didn't do enough.
Yeah, and it's, I don't know.
I gave them 23 wins. It was 22 and 11. Forgive me.
Well, they hope for 23 or more this year, then.
Yeah.
But I think they have a really good chance at, you know, they have everyone back. The coaching staff, I think, is kind of, they're moving in the right direction, I'd think. And I know it'll be a lot harder to game plan against this Big Ten, obviously, as some changes are going throughout some of the teams. But that could also be a good thing. That could be, you know, teams are playing with less experience. Teams are playing with younger guys.
I think they got Missouri next year.
That would be good.
In the schedule.
But I just think, like, this Big Ten is always going to be good. But will it be as top-heavy as it was last year? Because only getting four teams in, it seems ludicrous for a Big Ten conference for basketball. I get it for like baseball or whatever it may be, but I don't know. I think that there's a, like we said, they have to finish in that top six. I think
they have the Kansas City tournament, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Hall of Fame Classic.
Oh, yeah.
Google who's in the Hall of Fame Classic, but I think Missouri's in that. You got Seton Hall, you mentioned, and that's all that's listed. So
they have Creighton at home this year?
Yes, they will.
Okay.
That'll be good. We were talking Nick Saban. We meant to get into Nick Saban. Let's get into Saban because he was asked about the graduate transfer situation. The NCAA is now allowing only 20 headsets per coaching staff. And Saban's staff is around 80. So how's he going to deal with that? It's pretty funny today. He was getting a bit cranked up and angry.
I don't know who's driving all this stuff, but, you know, to me it's kind of like mouse manure when you're up to years and elephant doo-doo.
Thank you. The little things are the big things. Old Miss will never see the light of day again because of recruiting violations. Although you tried to hire their former head coach who beat you as your offensive coordinator. More from Saban, transfer situation, the grad transfer situation. Again, their backup center wants out. Saban's tired of getting the finger pointed at him.
The push for more freedom, particularly with graduate transfers and proposals.
Well, then we should change the rule. I don't think it should be on me. I think we should change the rule. All right, if we agree in the SEC at these meetings that we're going to have free agency in our league and everybody can go wherever they want to go when they graduate and that's what's best for the game, then I think that's what we should do. then Brandon Kennedy can go wherever he wants to go. But if we don't do that, why is it on me? Because we have a conference rule that says he can't do it. And he can do it, but he's supposed to sit out for a year. So why is it on me? It's not even my decision. It's a conference rule. I always give people releases. And he has a release to go wherever he wants to go, but the conference rule says he can't go to the conference. So, why is that on me?
You just look unhappy a lot, Nick. It's easy to say, well, Nick's being a... won't let me leave. We'll have more thoughts on clarity from Nick Saban. It is a conference rule. Go ahead, get out of here. See ya. Oh, wait a minute. The league says. You know why? Because the SEC would eat their own and every other Power Five would do the same. Ah, you're coddled. You're unhappy. Come on over. We'll coddle you. We will make you happy. Can you throw a spiral? Can you tackle in the open field? Do you play hurt? Let's have a talk, son.
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HailVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Tomorrow, ESPN's Brad Edwards. We're going to reach out to Dr. Petey, Derek Peterson. I think it's steak and a beer time, although I feel bad about making him pay the steak and a beer bet because he picked Houston. I had Golden State. I won the series. The bet was a steak and a beer. I don't feel too bad. We'll see. That is the docket tomorrow.
You'll feel better when you have the steak and the beer.
I think we're going to have a Searles and a Barney sighting Thursday. Crossing my fingers for that. And good stuff today. We miss Coach McBride. We'll try and run him down either later this week or next week. So appreciate him as always. More from Nick Saban on clarity when it comes to coddling, transfers, and this graduate transfer situation. He spoke today, and it's always funny to hear him get cranked up. Usually when he gets kind of that tone or that look in his eye, it's a message to his team. He's just whining to his conference now.
It seems like there's a rule.
Let me ask you a question. If we make a rule that guys can transfer whenever they want to transfer, how are we supposed to get people to do what they should do? I'm not talking about football players. I'm talking about people. I'm talking about making good choices and decisions off the field. I'm talking about doing the right things academically. So if a guy's missing class and I say, you're not going to play in this game because you're missing class, which I've done on occasion, and then he just says, well, I'm transferring. Is that good?
I think it's great. All he's saying is somebody's got to be the adult. Mm-hmm. And it's harder to be the adult when you have the, I'm going to take my ball and go home. Now, listen, man, people have considered transferring. People hit adversity. You consider dropping out of college or high school. I mean, people just, you have doubts. I get it. That's part of life. But do you keep trucking or do you check out? Mm-hmm. All he's trying to do is keep you from checking out. And he's going to run you through a wall. And his intent and interest may be him versus you. He wants you to perform for him. Mm-hmm. But he'll get you paid and get you to the league. Showing that he can do that. What are mighty about texting and driving? There's stupider things to do, but that list is very short. Behavior when you text and drive is always dangerous. And every driver, all the time, no matter how safely you think you can do it. You know what? When you text and drive, it takes your eyes off the road an average of 5 seconds. It's like driving blind at 55 miles per hour, more than the length of a football field, and increases your crash risk 23 times. It's also illegal. and you can be fined between $100 and $300. No text message more important than your life, the lives of your passengers, or those on the roadway. So don't text and drive. A message from the Nebraska Department of Highway Safety. We'll be back with you tomorrow at 4 with Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Colton Stone, Chris Schmidt, all good to be with you again. And back at it. Tomorrow at 4, we'll find you on Hail Varsity.